Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Prepare at last his return, your behavior our Savior discerns. I'll save you in the end, my friend.
This is Tribulation Farce. I am Tim Lanning. This is Jennifer Cheek.
Hey, everyone.
My wife, by the way.
Oh, so you had to go further. I was ready to go.
I know. I'm trying to keep it quick, but also different sometimes, and I do apologize.
You gotta try new things out.
How you doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's June 28th, 2022. Roe v. Wade was struck down on Friday, so not great. But before we get into that too much.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few things we need to address from the last episode.
Yeah, it's basically, we support the Supreme Court.
Get out of here. Absolutely not.
No, it's weird how overlapping 2022 things are. Well, as Jennifer's going to describe, there's a lot of neoliberal people that think that the dang old Republic fell in 2016. but I think the important thing to know is we lost the war in like 1980.
At least.
So.
And honestly, you could probably just like keep pushing it back and pushing it back.
Yeah.
But no, Tim, I meant you need to address your statements that you said that a Lutheran believed.
Okay.
That babies were in heaven.
Oh, yeah. That was a joke.
Was it a joke?
Well, yeah, no, it was because absolutely I knew my stepmom was not Lutheran.
Got it. Okay, so just to clarify for listeners out there, we don't think Lutherans think that babies are in heaven.
I also don't not think that.
I mean, but it sounds like they don't from what people have said.
I was I'm not going to apologize.
No, I'm not saying to apologize.
Ever.
I'm not saying to apologize. I'm just saying to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
That's some evangelical shit for sure.
Yeah, and I think I should clarify a jize. I like Lutherans.
Lutherans are like very chill, actually.
When I used to live in St. Louis, before the time that I currently live in St. Louis, we went to a bingo night of like a charity thing, I think, at a church, even though I don't think it was technically a church charity thing, but
it was at the church.
It was at the church. And I was like, me and my brother were like, hey, can we bring beers to this? What's up? And she's like, you can't bring beers to this.
Da, 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 da.
So we get there, and these old people next to us pull out a whole handle of Jimmy Dean beers. Wait.
Jimmy Dean sausage vodka.
Jim Beam whiskey.
Wow.
And I'm like, God damn it.
See, that goes hard. And I think that this is a thing that Tim and I have talked about a lot. Like, I think if you grow up Christian, but you drink, like if your denomination or church like drinks, you have a lot more likelihood of being cool.
Yeah.
But like no Christians that don't drink are cool. They're just not.
Okay. Okay.
And actually we're going to get into booze in these chapters
and
too.
We're throwing out a lot of statements and I personally don't get straight edge people. So there's probably some Christian straight edge punk people that think they're cool.
But straight edge is different than no one should do this ever.
That is true.
That's usually, I feel like usually straight edge people are just like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, and oftentimes they're like, I did cocaine when
exactly.
I was
13. And like, obviously, whatever. I'm just saying, if you grow up in a church, like, at least like Catholicism has like, I don't know, like style.
Yeah.
I just wanted to
point out that just in case, and I do explicitly mean straight edge Christians, not all straight edge people, because I knew a lot of them in high school.
They're around.
Your music is, straight edge Christian music. Get out of here. Ugh.
The other thing I wanted to bring up that came up last time, Laura Groh Nyberg on Twitter let us know that Stonegal is a parody of Rockefeller and I want to kill myself.
I mean,
do you get it? Stone Gal? Rockefeller?
that's
it's lit. So bad.
That's so good.
Like, honestly, Tim LaHaye, like, Jerry B. Jenkins, you must pay for your crimes if that was you.
This is not a, Jennifer does not speak for the podcast on this point, unfortunately.
I hate it a lot.
I think it's good, mostly.
No. And so now that we got those things out of the way, now I can get back into the depressing shit, mm-hmm. which is talking about Roe v. Wade. And as I have talked about in some of our previous episodes, you know, we're doing this because Left Behind is funny, but also because it has real impacts on our current day lives. And I think Roe v. Wade being overturned is a great example of that. So I wanted to give you guys a little background that I actually just recently learned that I did not know this. Mm-hmm. So Tim LaHaye was a Southern Baptist preacher. The Southern Baptists did not care about abortion until pretty recently. And actually, and you can go look this up on the Southern Baptist Convention's website. Like, they have, like, their different referendums that they've passed. In 1971, 2 years before Roe was passed, they actually passed a resolution supporting abortion.
Right. So it's not just that, like, they didn't think about it, didn't care about it, or didn't want to touch that hot button issue. Like, no, it's good.
And they specifically, like, it wasn't, they weren't supporting it just in cases of rape or incest, but also, I'm going to quote directly from it. If there was clear evidence of severe fetal deformity and carefully ascertained evidence of the likelihood of damage to the emotional, mental, and physical health of the mother.
That's insane.
Yeah, and not only that, but 1 year after Roe, in 1974, they passed another resolution affirming the previous one, saying, we're still cool with abortion.
Right.
They did not actually pass a resolution against abortion until Reagan was elected in 1980, and that's when shit started to get real bad. So, in addition to that,
An actor president.
Wow, that's so... An actor president who's not all there mentally?
Weird.
Huh.
Weird.
And then I've talked a lot of shit about Tim LaHaye, and we'll continue to do so.
Yeah, we do not like Tim LaHaye.
We hate him. But what I found out that really does suck is that his wife, Beverly LaHaye, is still alive.
Oh.
She's not dead.
So we should watch our mouth.
We should watch our asses. And Beverly LaHaye, you would think, like, oh, she's like a pastor's wife. Maybe she's not doing anything. No, of course she was. She founded an organization called Concerned Women for America in 1979. And it was initially a reaction against the National Organization for Women. It was just basically being like, we hate feminists. Mm-hmm. But then obviously went on to be super anti-abortion, anti-marriage equality, against the U.S. being in the U.N. Like,
that's so fucking weird how often... I mean, I'm sure it's happened consistently, but, like, separation of church and state, I mean, it seems like they only take it meaning the state cannot fuck with the church.
Yes.
Meaning, please let me be tax exempt.
Because the other piece of it is that actually Concerned Women for America also was trying to convince people to allow Christian teaching and prayer and shit in school. So they don't want separation. Yeah. They want their religion to be the main one and for no one to go against them. So
yeah. Interesting.
I just find it really fascinating that Tim LaHaye essentially didn't really turn anti-abortion until like 1980. And these books came out in 1995. So
right.
it was not like this was a super long, like, oh, they've always thought this. And I just kind of assumed that, oh, evangelicals have always thought that way. They super didn't.
Yeah.
This is pretty recent. Well, and it was a concerted effort by political groups to make people think abortion was
bad. Because they tried to do interracial marriage.
Yes.
And then, meaning like they are going against it, but then like, oh boy, even for us, that's bad.
I mean,
and they tried a few other things, and then they finally stuck abortion.
Yeah.
And that worked.
Well,
so
because
they don't give a fuck. They
also
just wanted to win.
They aligned themselves with the Catholics, and I think that was where the abortion thing came in. But like Bob Jones University did not, I'm pretty sure, I might have this date wrong, but I don't think they allowed interracial dating or marriage until 2000.
That's what...
It's really late, and that's where, obviously, that Tim LaHaye went to school at Bob Jones University. So it all comes full circle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw a tweet thread that I didn't retweet because I didn't know if it was hashtag fake news or not, but he went through and kind of searched the term abortion from, like, papers in the late 1780s and 90s and stuff like that. And he expected that the word wouldn't have been used.
Yeah.
But it turns out the word was used a lot in the context that we think, meaning abort, and similarly in the fashion of abort a fetus, including, they just as many instances of using it as an idiom as using it as, oops, someone got an abortion.
Yeah.
And it's the implication seemed to be that people only talked about it if something bad happened. So, like, one of the stories was, so-and-so didn't cheat on his wife. He didn't want to go to a traditional midwife. Mm. And the implication there is, like, midwives just gave abortions. Who cares?
I mean, they did.
So he did. He just got some herbs. Turns out the herbs were arsenic.
Oh, no.
Poison killed his mistress. And that was seen as bad. As opposed to being like, well, she should have kept her legs closed or what have you.
I mean, there was abortion in the Old Testament.
Yeah, I mean.
Like, there was, like, a thing of, like, if you think your wife cheated on you, give her these fucked up herbs.
Right.
And the baby will fall out.
And I just don't know if, like, people aren't being taught natural abortions or if they're just, like, much more dangerous than we thought. Like, when you take
the... Oh, the natural ones are very dangerous.
The moon teas.
Yeah, that shit
like
is
that.
Not good. It actually can, like, shut your liver down. So that's... If I give a little PSA, look for your local abortion and reproductive rights organizations. See what they're saying. They're going to have the best idea of wherever you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know personally for me, we live in Missouri, so this is very... real to me.
Yeah, we knew that going into it. And you know, I can't imagine this is true, but please, like, I hope to God, no one listening to this is like, pro-life
you know, anti-abortion.
Cause it's part of the reason why we wanted to do the podcast Making Fun of the Books, as we've said before, is how all this shit from the religious right, the evangelicals, touches all this. So it's fucked.
But. Yeah. I mean, I've been reading a lot of older books from this time period when, you know, Roe v. Wade was first, you know, put into effect. And I am concerned that there's just a huge effort right now to push women, well, push everyone into the, like, you know, hetero family unit and to push women to stay home with their children and have lots of children. Like, I don't think necessarily that they're going to, like, actually ban women from voting. I think it's going to be more disenfranchise them, keep them in the house, keep them weighed down with, you know, taking care of lots of children that they didn't necessarily want.
Right. And yeah, even the Supreme Court is just going to be like, the federal government can't stop a governor from Georgia from running over a gay man in his truck. Like, that's, you know, that's his religious expression.
Yeah.
So they're not going to most likely out and out say gay marriage is illegal. What they're going to do is allow
the states to decide.
Brewster County, Oklahoma, to not issue.
So it will
gay
effectively
marriage
be
certificates
illegal. I mean, that's already been the case.
Isn't that so fucked up? If, like, the only way to keep these things from being illegal is to have, like, the biggest law in the land be like, don't do that.
Oh, anyway, I had to talk about it up top because it was just too on my mind. Like, it's not even.
It wouldn't have really flown with the chapters we're reading right now. They don't really mention abortion at all.
No, zero abortion. I actually do kind of want to go search for the. I'm sure abortion comes up. Like, I'm actually, like, fascinated to see when it comes up for the first time because I bet it will.
Yeah, I bet Carpathia is just going to be given abortions.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know Hattie Durham's getting an abortion. Oh. Or actually, maybe the opposite, though. Maybe wants her to have his devil baby.
This feels like something.
You're remembering things? Okay.
I mean, I'm making up a lot.
I don't remember shit, so.
Well, like I said, all the characters become the most important people on the planet, including Hattie Durham.
Yes.
So.
Antichrist queen.
Yeah. So I could totally, like, this is not me.
Paramore.
I can't remember anything, but I could totally see Hattie dating my main man, Nikolai Carpathia, and then her calling Rayford, like, I need an abortion.
I gotta get this devil baby out of me.
Yeah.
See, I did the voice when we were, when.
There's a running joke of when we test our microphone, Jennifer does a voice, and I'm like, that's not helping anyone.
That's not how you talk, but sometimes I do talk like that, Tim.
Yeah, but you mostly don't.
I mean, I did it just then.
Anyways, chapter 6, Left Behind, book 1, booze.
Yeah, man, we start out this chapter with Rayford chugging 3 inches of whiskey.
Right.
Bro, that's kind of a lot,
It's a lot.
That's a lot.
Because typically, even in television shows.
Usually like an inch.
Yeah.
In a cup, in a fancy cup. This is not a shot.
Right.
This is in a, like, whiskey glass.
Yeah.
Three inches?
Yeah.
That's so much.
Usually,
that's like a full glass.
It's a bit much, yeah.
Which I think, and they talk about him just throwing it back. I don't know if you can you do. Can you do that?
Alcoholics can.
I guess. But, like,
It's funny because in television programs, they usually just do such a small amount. And I'm like, oh, cool. Whiskey for children. and Jerry B is like, oh, it's either A, they don't drink that hard. So they just kind of assume.
I think they don't know. I don't think they know what a normal amount of alcohol is.
Did you mean three fingers? Because that's usually what people say.
I think that's probably what he meant. And then it was like, I don't really know. It must be an inch. Mm-hmm. That is very much the vibe I get, is that he does not drink alcohol. And does, it's like, it makes me think of one of my friends from grad school, Katie, who doesn't drink. And oh God, yeah. She would pour us a full solo cup full of wine. Like, Katie, you can't, no, you're like, going to kill us.
I don't drink, but I want to help you. Yeah, it's like, uh-oh, yeah. It's a Katie drink. Careful, yeah. Everybody.
It's like, you're about to be down for that count.
So that really put me in the mood reading this, because it's so weird and funny. And he was on an empty stomach, which is even weirder and funnier, but...
And he's basically like, I'm about to get like a drunk.
I'm already... Oh, I'm shit, I'm sad. should I be feeling it already? Is this normal?
Oh, God. He falls over.
But do it... Yeah, take... Drinking... Unless he's has the weirdest... Even with a shot glass, that's 3 inches.
Yeah, that's a big shot glass!
But good for Ray... I mean, if he would have said, like, he put one of his fucked up square ice cubes that... Irene got him from Sharper Image.
I don't think those existed in 1995. So I don't think things were that cool then.
They did exist, kind of, because they had metal, I see on a Mad Men's. Mm. They had metal ice trays. And they'd rip it up.
I mean, maybe Rayford did have that, but while he's chugging his 3 inches of whiskey, we have yet another, like, flashback memory, mm-hmm. and Ray is reflecting on how Irene used bathroom logic to convince him to keep the booze from Raimi. And what I mean by that is...
Did you say bathroom logic?
Yes, because she literally brings up... Basically, she's like...
Oh, yeah.
You should hide the booze. And he's like, well, isn't that dishonest? And she's like, you tell your co-pilot that you're going to the bathroom, but you don't tell him what you do in there, right?
Checkmate.
And he's like, Irene! Oh, my...
Don't talk about doo-doo.
My goodness.
Especially not an airplane.
It's not ladylike.
Irene has a point. We should talk about doo-doo more often.
Yeah, she's a doo-doo girl. She loves it. Like, tell me more about your bathroom habits.
This feels entirely how I approached the idea of my parents drinking when I was a kid. So I'm with Raimi here.
So you didn't want to see it?
Oh, I remember seeing my dad who, like, drink. Before I was, like, 20, I probably saw my – or, like, 18. I probably saw my dad drink 3 beers.
I never.
Oh, your dad doesn't drink.
My parents, yeah, they like don't drink. My dad, there was never alcohol.
My dad didn't really drink ever at all either. That being said, like, I saw him have like a beer three times. And I was like, oh no, he's gonna die.
And you're like, he's going to hell.
He's going to hell. So I wish I had a slightly more healthy relationship. But it was funny when I lived in St. Louis before I lived here now.
Yeah.
My dad visited my apartment and I had Jim Beam whiskey there, and he's like, oh, get rid of that. That's the hard stuff.
Jim's like, I'll get rid of
and
it.
He was like,
in the belly.
I actually
you
did,
literally, no, I remember specifically.
Yeah, Jennifer was not joking. My dad told me to pour it down the drain. I go, I'll pour it down my belly. Glug, glug, glug.
He didn't like that.
Whatever. Shane Strap's like,
get over it. But yeah, Rayford, he's being drunk and sad and thinking about Raimi, which is a horrible nickname for your child. Like,
yeah, my phone did not like typing that. It's like, you mean Taylor, right? Like, Taylor.
But all of a sudden, with the booze coursing through him, Rayford is like, I need to find the Bible to save my daughter, Chloe.
Yeah, unfortunately, gang, the Bible makes ladies and gentlemen, the Bible.
The Bible. There's a lot of Bible in
there. We're getting a lot of Bible stuff.
Oh my God.
That being said, if we can still kinda approach Rayford being like, fuck, the rapture happened. Guess it gotta be a Christian. Kind of like how we say. But like,
right, if it happened, we'd be like, well okay, shit. I guess.
But for him, he's approaching it like a mystery. And I do think it's kind of funny throughout this, like, what the fuck is the Bible? Like, is there like,
what is the Bible?
Is there like, index?
No, I actually thought it was super funny, and I'm actually, I think we'll get into this a little bit more later, but I am very curious. If you were a person that didn't really grow up, like, familiar with the Bible, and this happened, where would you start? Like, where would you, like, what would you look for?
Yeah.
Because, like, I can't even, like, begin to answer that question, because I've been so steeped in the Bible my entire life.
Yeah.
But if a person, like, truly is not super familiar with it, like, it's like, this is too long! There's too many words in this! How do I read it? There was also a part in this that really made me laugh, and I'll read this quote now. Irene had always talked of a loving God, but even God's love and mercy had to have limits. Had everyone who denied the truth pushed God to his limit? Was there no more mercy, no second chance? Maybe there wasn't, and if that was so, that was so. Like the concept of Rafer, who got, like, not taken to heaven, being like, well, if God decided not to, that's just fair. Like, oh, that is such a Christian brain thing to say.
But
like,
it also
well, it's fair that God is going to send me to hell for eternity.
Right. It also follows his boomer brained, like, I'll walk.
I'm going to walk. Exactly. It's like, I deserve this punishment. Life is misery, and that's right. All I deserve.
And, you know, it's going to consistently happen every time you meet a new character. It's, gosh, we sure were stupid to not think that the rapture was going to happen after we heard about the rapture from weirdos.
Yeah.
Who don't drink or fuck me anymore. So, you know, ring the bell, take a drink, whatever. It's going to be something that we think about every single time something is written about a person before they're a Christian, after they're a Christian. All are the faults there to make a better character, or all the faults there to show that this is why they're not saved.
And I feel like it's morality play. I think it's more of that. Yeah. I think that any deep character like traits or development is by accident. That's what I think.
How dare you?
So Rayford then goes into his memory palace thinking about how Raimi was a mama's boy, but he wasn't effeminate.
My son's not gay.
Not fucking gay.
Sure, he played dress up and dolls. Sure,
sure, he kept kissing boys in the playground. No, I'd like he was a mama's boy, but he wasn't effeminate.
Right.
Like, he's got to let us know.
But a lot of this, it does just make Rayford sound like a prick.
And he sounds like an asshole.
And he knows it. And he's like, that's why I'm always confused. Like, what are we supposed to take from this? Are you trying to pill our daddies out there to become
Better dads? Be
better Christian fathers? I doubt it.
I'd rather you not.
Yeah, because I think some people.
I don't want you to.
I'm just thinking too, like, I can't remember. I'm wondering if Rayford gets married.
Oh, he does eventually, for sure.
He does?
Oh, yeah.
I forget.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, isn't that weird? Because he knows he's a Christian.
Yeah!
And he knows.
Yes!
They have to bring that up.
They have, like, are they gonna, like, okay, are you gonna go sister wives in heaven?
Right.
Like, I think what their answer is that you don't do sex stuff in heaven. You don't do relationships like that.
Boo.
Which is like, that is where, okay, I mean, the Mormon concept is like, you got your family on your planet for eternity.
Yeah.
But
Joseph Smith got one thing decent.
kind of right. Because, like, again, to me, this is like goes back to like heaven sucks. It sounds bad. It's like, you're telling me for eternity I'm never going to fuck again?
Right.
No thanks. I'm out.
But yeah, like I said, if the option is hanging out at like the world's most boring and weird hotel lobby versus like
eternal hellfire. I mean, like, yeah, but good thing it's all fake, so it doesn't matter. So Rayford's reflected on how, unfortunately, Chloe took after him, and that's why she is still a godless heathen and still upon this earth. So we end this chunk of the chapter with Rayford got to do more Bible stuff to save his beautiful daughter, Chloe.
Is this where he puts his, Raimi and Irene's clothes in a box?
I think that's a little later in this chapter. I might have even forgot to put that in as a note, so.
Well, let's mention it now.
Yeah.
He does something that I think we even touched on the other, early in episode one or two, where you gotta have a bug out bag of your partner's scent just in case.
Yeah, you gotta go huff it.
You gotta go huff it.
So when the depression gets too much.
I did like, so what he does is he grabs, Raimi's clothes that he got raptured in.
Which I think was like a t-shirt and underwear and socks.
Yeah, so imagine
like,
Ray just huffing undies. Weird. But not that weird.
There were like a lot of like weird little sentences in this chapter, like talking. Hold on, actually, now I want to read one because it was just like so fucking wild. Actually, this is a spoiler for the end of the chapter. So.
Just do it now. Who cares?
And with that, he slowly ate his cookies, the smell and taste bringing images to him of Irene in the kitchen and the milk making him long for his boy. I was like, that's one of those sentences that like out of context, like. What?
This is a little queer here.
The milk making you long for your boy. Okay, Raver. Weird.
Yeah. This chapter is full of strange things, and I think it's just because they're hitting on that grief yet again. And
yeah, it's trying to be like The Leftovers, but again, way worse. Even right. though The Leftovers didn't exist then. Right, exactly. It was still trying to be that, but doing it badly.
Yeah, so he puts Raimi's clothes in one box, and Irene's clothes in another box, his jack-off box.
Oh, so he can just do the two. He's got to go get a huff of each one. Yeah,
today I feel like huffing my son. Today I feel like
I need to smell my boy's milk smells.
Yeah, because I was nervous that it was going to commingle because, like, you know, he wants to jack off into
her flannels.
But then he's like, I'm hungry. I know what I'll do. I'll go eat 8 cookies and milk.
I need to go eat my mommy wife's cookies and milk. My mommy wife, who's in heaven, by the way.
I just ate 3 inches of whiskey. I sure could use some more sugar.
I sure could use 8 chocolate chip cookies for dinner.
The only negative thing I have about this chapter, other than Buck being in it, is
bad news, he's in all of them.
They don't mention Ray's horrible diarrhea.
Oh, you know he had. Oh, man. Oh, he had to feel so bad the next morning. Like 3 inches of whiskey on an empty stomach and then topping that with 8 chocolate chip cookies?
But I have no idea what time it is.
You got the rapture shits now.
I was like, why'd you not eat just like a piece of bread?
Like, you don't got any ramen noodles in your house? Like, nothing? No Stouffer's in the freezer?
Oh, man. That'd be sick if there was, like, a leftover pot roast that he, like, bitched at Irene. You're making beef stroganoff again, bitch!
Wow. Mm-hmm. So now let's go over to Buck. He's at a seedy motel.
I hate Buck.
Buck is so annoying. We get, again, like, an immediately, like, kind of flashback because he listens to the voicemail from Dirk Burton again that he'd already, like, kind of been talking about, but again, this is where conspiracy theory, like New World Order shit is happening. Tim, would you read this quote here? This is from Dirk Burton. This is excerpted from Dirk Burton's voicemail.
Well, I'm not gonna do a Welsh accent, so.
No, don't do that.
Something is cooking, and I don't even want to suggest what it is other than in person. Visit me as soon as you can. In case that's not possible, let me just encourage this. Watch the news for the installation of a new leader in Europe. What does that mean?
He's talking about Nicola Carpenter.
I know that, but like, what is the new leader? Doesn't the EU or UN or whatever, like, the UN, like, appoints people from, like, Ghana in, like, small countries, I think. Or I made that up.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't think the EU has a leader. I also don't remember, even though I took a class.
But he's just saying there's going to be a new leader in Europe, not in the EU, just like in Europe general.
Yeah, the EU didn't exist when this book was written.
Oh, fuck, you're right. But I think he's specifically talking about Romania. But not saying it. So wait, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is the way that he says it, it's a leader within Europe on the whole, where, like, when Merkel came on the stage, you didn't say, oh, there's a new leader in Europe.
Okay, this is where I think this is just not a very well-written book.
I think you're right, but
I think that's just why I don't think that he made anything bigger by it.
I think you're technically right, but that's what I'm saying is I think we're going A to B to C of, like, Nikolai's going to be the president of Europe.
Well, I think that is maybe it's foreshadowing that. And man, the way they, like, explain what's going on with Nikolai in this chapter really makes me
laugh.
Like,
okay, the condor, as we talked about, is grooming the dolphin.
I mean, frankly, I do feel like Dirk Burton kind of rules because he's, like, doing, like, clandestine, like, not only spy shit, but I mean, I guess kind of. He's kind of spying.
I hope Buck gets to meet or try to find Dirk later and he's just, like, decapitated and rotting in his flat.
Oh, you don't remember.
No, I don't know what happens to Dirk Burton. Not at all.
I do.
Wow! You're one-upping me today. Nice job. Today's your day in remembering things.
Because I did read this book, so I know mostly what happens in this book. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Yay.
I think you're going to love it.
Yeah, I mean, if Nikolai Carpathia doesn't kick him off, like, I don't know, that weird-shaped building in London.
Oh, like, oh, the Gherkin? Yeah. I thought you were going to say, like, the Burj Khalifa, like, the highest building in the world.
Like anything. Well, I was going to say, like, any of this would take place in, like, Dubai or whatever. But I was like, you know what?
It might, though.
Well, because eventually it takes over, like, Jerusalem, but that's obvious.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet.
I mean, that's, like, book 9.
So after Buck listens to his Dirk Burton voicemail, he gives his papa a call.
Which he said by... He's gonna call out West again. I was like, what does that mean? Who's this?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Is his family
there? I mean, obviously, context happens right. Very quickly, so it's not that big of a deal.
I feel like, so in this conversation, we basically find out that Buck has a weird relationship with his family.
Oh, I hate Buck.
He's so fucking annoying, but also his family sounds annoying, too.
His family sounds like your family. But not as nice.
Yeah, like, so, because...
Less racist.
Yeah, so this... Yeah. Basically, his dad... We get the info that his family resents him for going and being a big Ivy League journalist boy with clout.
Right. Instead of being an oil monger.
Instead, yeah, being in Oklahoma. Yeah, right, because weren't they in, like, in Oklahoma?
Something like that. They said explicitly, I don't remember. Oh, wait, West?
Why did they say West, then?
No, it's Oregon. No?
I swear...
It was something.
I don't remember now. I think his family's like from Oklahoma. So yeah, it was all whole thing of like, oh, you're going to the East Coast mm-hmm. and the liberal elites and mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. But now that Buck's getting those cover stories, his family only wants to hang out with him for clout.
And it's really funny because it's obviously that whole thing of like, we disown you. Wait a second. You've become a rapper, an actress, or an Instagram influencer.
Suddenly, I love you again.
Can I get tickets to your next Instagram influencer event?
Yeah.
But they do it because he's a world-renowned journalist, and that's very, very, as the kids say, cringe.
It is very cringe and also hilarious in the mm-hmm. context of 2022 when, like, the right wing is like, we want to execute journalists. So I don't feel like that would still work in today's day and age.
Like, they would hate him probably more.
Yeah, they would, like, fully disown him, like, oh, our liberal elite son, he's part of the cabal.
You're going to New York to be a journalist? Fuck off.
So another fun thing that happens in this chapter is that we really get into the topic of fake Christians.
Which is going to come up a lot.
It comes up a lot.
They need people to know the lore and to be like, fuck. So we're gonna meet some more of those folks. And it's very interesting. And it is kind of a terrifying thing to read when, I don't know, you're 12.
Oh, you're reading
these books.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, maybe I'm not a Christian.
Maybe I didn't do it right. So, yeah, so Buck and his dad are having a convo, and Buck's dad says this. You always get into this liberal East Coast baloney. You know good and well we had you in church and Sunday school from the time you were a baby. You're as much a Christian as any one of us. God, that's where you're wrong.
Well, and that's what I think is so insane about how we, on a meta level, on a reading the book level, by putting ourselves in the eyes of a Christian reading this level, I have no idea how to take this comparatively to now, because it's like, here is a good old boy, a blue collar oil monger, saying liberal bullshit at him, meaning like, you know, you don't know shit, fake news.
Like, it's liberal.
But he's arguing for it not being the rapture.
Yes.
Because he's still there.
Yes.
Which is 110% opposite of the vibe I assumed that we would have, like, this is the first, essentially, fake Christian we get.
Yes.
It's not one of the flavors. We're going to get many flavors.
We're going to get several flavors.
But it's literally, like, the first conversation.
Yeah.
So... Because of that, it kind of hits a little harder, and it's really weird. Like, I just don't know if it's because Jerry B and LaHaye are so rich they just have nothing but loathing for these people, or
yeah.
They didn't think about it. They just wanted, like, okay, we've already made Buck this, so what's next in the storyline? Okay, well, we should introduce this here. Oh, isn't that weird that we're, you know, putting this on the good old boys? And like, well, not really. This happens to them too. Yeah, but it's like the first ones we're doing.
So, like, so what I was thinking about is like, okay, like what denomination is this church out there? Because like, if he's from like Oklahoma, I swear Oklahoma came up with him at some point. I feel pretty confident.
We agree it's an O.
It's in Oregon, Oklahoma, whatever it is, like
Ontario.
I actually was just saying, it was like, what if they were like Lutherans or something, like a more chill, maybe they were like a more chill denomination. But like what this also made me think about is what counts as a Christian? Cause there's extremely right now in the, aftermath of Roe v. Wade being overturned, there's a big swatch of people being like, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's not a real Christian. Like, this person, Trump's not a real Christian. And it's like, well, I think if someone says they're a Christian, they count as a Christian. Like, you know what I mean?
It's like, their heart, Jennifer. And who are we?
And growing up for me, like, I'm assuming you were taught the same thing. The only thing it takes to be a Christian is to be saved, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Call on Jesus. You do it one time. It counts forever.
Right. But it's, like we've said before, it's not just saying the words. It's meaning it in your heart. So, like, obviously, Trump is not a Christian, but Marjorie Taylor Greene might be because she's a maniac.
Right. She does go to church. Like, a lot of, and that's, I think that's the thing. I've been following a person on Twitter, Chrissy Stroop. I forget what her exact handle is, but she started the Empty the Pews movement and just like critiquing Christianity in general. And she brought up a really good point. Which is that if you try to distance yourself, like being like, oh, that person, they're not a real Christian. You're basically saying Christianity is inherently good and it's never bad.
Yes.
Which is not true. Yes. Like, I'm sorry, but it's just not true.
Yes. And even from like not a ex-evangelical perspective.
Right.
Christians are people too.
They're people. Right. You can't just be like, these people are embarrassing me, so they're not part of it. Like, right. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And even when I was in the church, it was easy to defend, you know, mega church, fake preachers, you know, all these horrible people, because it just felt not our problem. But then the moment I started sticking my toes out, I'm like, bro, I mean, you got to take care of your house.
Yes.
And the fact that we don't, you know, we being me at the time, trying to be a Christian still, was pretty illuminating.
Yeah.
And this is like before all the like cover up stuff from like sexual assault cases through, you know, the Catholic Church and then the Baptist Church.
And the Southern Baptist Convention also.
Yeah. I mean, I think,
which is extremely ongoing right now.
Yeah. And I think we're going to find it in, I was going to say all churches, but I think anything where there's
any organization,
adult small amount of adults around kids.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I just think it's really interesting that there's this tension in Christianity of like both like progressive Christians being like the conservative Christians aren't real Christians and the conservative Christians being like the progressive Christians aren't the real Christians. Like
right.
Everyone, who's the true Christian?
Right.
Like,
but it's both of your faults.
Yeah. I mean, not to like, I'm not trying to shit on like progressive Christians who are like really out there doing the work and being welcoming and being helpful to people. But, like, don't come yell at me when I get mad at Christians.
Right.
Like, go talk to the bad ones, okay?
And like I've said before, part of the rubric for a lot of the progressive cool Christians that, you know, get it, is they typically don't, you know?
They don't.
It's very much like if someone talks shit about someone, or like subtweets someone on Twitter, and then if you automatically think it's about you, you're somehow admitting that it could be about you. It's like, wait, I have dirty armpits and I don't wipe properly. Yeah. So in that sense, in my experience, and obviously that's not science because I guarantee that people who are the good Christians that we're referring to get tired of people shitting on their faith constantly.
I'm sure they do.
But also, we're in America. I don't give a shit.
This is the burden.
None of this is
on.
This is the burden. You believe in something
I'm
that's not real, and it's doing untold amounts of issues.
Yeah.
And you're supporting, broadly speaking, an evil empire.
So another thing that comes up in this section that I think is also very Christian brained is Buck says this. It was the lack of any connection between his family's church attendance and their daily lives that made him quit going to church altogether the day it became his choice. Now, I thought that was an interesting way of framing
totally.
That.
Buck would never have thought that. Because
no,
Buck
he would absolutely
is,
not have.
This was the, like we said, this is why it's so weird and interesting to slightly dissect each of these points is because this is absolutely the author writing on the page to point out, like we were talking about before, yeah, they just weren't real Christians.
Yeah, they were lukewarm. And so that's why it turned Buck off to it. It's
and
like,
spit them out.
I have never been turned. I did not leave Christianity because I was turned off by lukewarm Christians.
No, I mean, I
was turned off by crazy ones.
Right. No, I mean, totally. If I saw people like, oh, you can kind of be cool and chill.
That was the only thing that made me even try to stay longer.
Exactly. I could see hypocrisy affects people in different ways.
Hypocrisy is a problem. I guess it depends on what he means by lack of connection.
We don't get examples.
I definitely took it as a, like, they're just not super into it. They go to church sometimes. Right.
And especially given all that we know about Buck and how he's framed, my man went to an Ivy League journalist school in Connecticut.
I think he went to Yale.
Yeah. So he obviously is not the type
of dude. Buck Williams went to Yale for real.
I know. When I went and played Frisbee there, we talked about it. But he doesn't seem like the guy at all. Even as a 12-year-old, she'd be like, wow, I was going to do this Christian thing, but the facts don't line up.
I can see that you're not walking in the Lord in your day.
Or maybe that was like the spark. I had to get to the bottom of this. Yeah. Why is my dad
investigative piece of my dad.
I'm going to be a wunderkind and scoop everyone.
Yeah, it just really made me laugh. Because I'm like, I don't think that anyone that I know who was Christian and became un-Christian, I don't think that's the reason. But maybe it is.
It's a pleasant excuse, and it's definitely I'm going to push back against it. Okay. That absolutely happens, and it's typically – I think it actually happens a lot.
Maybe it does. I'd be really curious.
It's simply because we don't get explanations, and it's Buck saying it.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people who don't go to, like, and I kind of mean more like adults, and I'm sure there's kids that see their parents being shitty and just want to push back against everything. So right. Like, all right, well, I'm not going to listen to the Eagles, football sucks, and also God's not real.
I think to me, this, like, little throwaway line just really felt like LaHaye and Jenkins, like, reverse engineering to say, see, if you're not passionate about your walk with the Lord, then you'll turn people off. And I'm like, I don't think that's the problem.
No, totally. Yeah. Everything, that's the thing. It's like everything you said is true based off the passage within the book. But hopefully most of our audience is not reading the books. They don't have the entire context.
That's true. Exactly.
So I just wanted to, and that's going to be like, you know, it's a little something that we're going to have to not really dance around, but being like, what we're saying is broad, but it's spurred by the specific thing in the book. And then obviously, like, part of the goal is to spin it out and then us say some wild shit that we can't take back and I won't take it back. All that good stuff.
So Buck decides to stop talking to his dad on the phone, and he's in his little motel and he's like, I'm gonna turn on the news. And he gets to see a lot of sick footage of people disappearing, which sounds awesome, and I want to see that.
It's funny that they don't have more of this,
and I kind of should lean into it,
right? And I kind of got to give it up that they show restraint as opposed to, I hate it. I want more.
I want more. But I
kind of got to give it up.
Yeah, and also this line really made me laugh. Buck thinks to himself, if somebody tried to sell a screenplay about millions of people disappearing, leaving everything but their bodies behind, it would be laughed off. Bitch is called The Leftovers. It existed.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And also left behind.
But also, that is funny. No one buy a book about this.
It's the book.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, we kind of have to give a little bit of their flowers back on it as well. Of, they do constantly say this thing for which every reader, not every reader, but a chunk of the readers believes to actually literally is going to happen. It's fucking insane.
Yeah.
And no one's going to believe you. Isn't it crazy?
Well, but see, that feeds into the persecution complex. They like that.
Yeah.
That brand of evangelical wants to feel misunderstood and like they have secret knowledge. Like, I think that, like, this is why you see such an overlap in evangelical, like, certain brands of evangelicalism and QAnon, because they like to have the secret knowledge that no one else has. Buck then gets a message from Ken Ritz, the pilot, that he's going to pick him up in the morning, and then we get the most insane sentence, maybe so far, in my opinion. Tim, can you please read this?
He was the type who could look at his watch before... Oh, my God.
This is Buck. This is about Buck, by the way.
This is the worst
thing. This made me so mad.
This made me so mad. This made me so mad. I was hoping it was going to be about Ken.
No.
But it's not.
No, we'll get to Ken.
Yeah, yeah. He's
and
later.
Honestly, I'm on Ken's side.
We love Ken.
We love Ken.
It's about Buck. The he being Buck. Buck was the type who could look at his watch before retiring and wake up precisely when he told himself to. It was nearly midnight. He would be up at 5:30.
I'm going bullshit.
Bullshit. Boo.
I'm going absolute bullshit.
Boo.
Now, I will say, I am a person who often does wake up before my alarm. Like, right. Shortly before my alarm.
But your alarm is vaguely consistent.
Exactly. It's like the same time. If I went to bed and lay down, and I also, for some reason, imagine him, like, literally laying, like, he's in a coffin, like a vampire, just, yeah. Like, laying back flat and then waking up. 5.5 hours later.
Yeah, well,
on the dot.
Shout out to when we find out later, and either next chapter or the end of this one, but like, it works. He wakes up 5.5 hours later.
He does it exactly.
And he said he hadn't moved a muscle the whole time. So you're not wrong.
Buck is like the worst Gary Stu. It's like, oh, this perfect dude, boy, he wakes up exactly when he wants to. He gets all the cover stories.
The only way I will ever let Buck off the hook is if there's a subplot where it turns out he was almost the Antichrist.
Oh my God. Because if there could have been a line of. If the prophecy was different.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if he's the Neville Longbottom of this, I would be into it.
Okay, yeah, I'm back. But I don't think it's going to happen.
I bet Nikolai's going to say some sick shit. Like,
because actually,
but you don't think I would be the good Antichrist? Look at you.
Like, but doesn't like Chaim Rosenzweig really say, like, you do have a lot in common?
That's fair. Okay.
Look at the Antichrist.
We're building
so
it.
So maybe
we're building
Buck
it.
Is the anti-antichrist. He's the flip side of it.
I hate Buck.
Yeah, Buck sucks ass. He's really annoying.
It pisses me off that, you know, Buck doesn't die.
Yeah, he should.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, though.
No.
So now I go back over.
Well, he might. Well, he doesn't.
Maybe eventually.
No, like, he doesn't. Because.
Okay. I don't know.
I'm not going to spoil it, even though I like to. This is the fun part is Buck fights at the final battle of Armageddon.
I have to assume he's like straight up on a unicorn or something.
No, he's like shooting a Kalashnikov off of Jerusalem's walls.
Okay.
And then this is a huge spoiler, but I think you need to hear it. Much like in Naruto, knowing that Sasuke and Sakura get together, you need to hear this info. The end of the book ends with the wall being blown up and it falling on top of Buck. And the last thing he sees is Jesus come back.
So he's like just in time.
Right.
Just in the
so
nick of time.
Most likely, I think Buck would have died right there.
But Jesus
is like, I got you, brother.
He scooped him up.
Yeah, shooting his Jesus beams. But like I said, I didn't read the next book because I thought I was getting older. But I was like, you're switching from the black covers to the white colors.
Like, I'm out now.
Bullshit. Even when I was a super Christian, I was weirded out by prayer and all this other like stuff, which probably meant I wasn't a real Christian.
Right, but you were like trying to make it work though.
Right. But I was like, I don't really want, this is going to be very embarrassing to read what these old dudes think Jesus is going to be like. I'm not trying to have read Left Behind book 13 that has red text in it.
Oh my God.
That's a joke for my Christians out
there. Oh, well, we're going to get into that too, actually. So now we switch back over to Rayford. This is a pretty short part. He gets in touch with his daughter's roommate at Stanford, and she is making her way to Chicago, slowly but surely.
Yeah, and for some reason, I forgot they're in Chicago for 2 seconds.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Tim, can you so Rayford gets in touch with Chloe's roommate, and then he sits down to read the paper, and oh my, what's this article? Tim, can you please read this excerpt?
Insanity. Democratic elections became passé when, with the seeming unanimous consensus of the people and both the upper and lower houses of the government, a popular young businessman slash politician assumed the role of president of the country. Nikolai Carpathia, a 33-year-old born in Cluj. 33.
I didn't stand out at the time. Hey, guys.
Guess what?
Do you know why in my Twitter bio I say older than the Antichrist? That's why.
That's why.
I just remember being – I think when I read it, I was 34. I was like, wow.
Wow.
I'm older than the Antichrist.
Unless – wait, because the Antichrist would be 33 when he comes to power. That's right. Yep. That's what's up.
Just like – wait, because isn't that – when did Jesus die?
33. That's I think that's what they're
Jesus
doing.
Year.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm curious if they're going to wrap that into a prophecy thing. I'm sure they're going to explain it to us later. But right now, I'm just leading into the yeah. Oh, it's 33 just like Jesus was.
Anyway.
33-year-old born in Cluj had in recent months taken the nation by storm with his popular, persuasive speaking – charming the populace, friend and foe alike. Reforms he proposed for the country saw him swept to prominence and power.
Oh, and guys, also, he looks like Robert Redford.
Yeah, a young Robert Redford.
A young Robert Redford. This comes up multiple times.
Yeah, Nicholas Hot. I'm going to Google Robert Redford. Redford Young.
I think he was hot. I mean,
he's definitely hot, but oh yeah, he's hot.
I mean, he's very Aryan. Yeah. He's very Aryan.
Oh, yeah. Look at this guy staring at you.
I am scared.
Being like, hey, I'm the Antichrist,
I'm
baby.
I'm blonde and I'm handsome. I've got a chiseled jaw and I'm the Antichrist.
Yeah. Eat my, ranch dressing. Oh, that's Paul Newman.
That is different. So let's go on over to chapter 7 now.
Chapter 7.
So we start off with Ken Ritz picking Buck up at the motel. He's going to fly him from wherever he is outside of Chicago to New York for $1,500.
Which, for a private plane, doesn't feel that bad.
Honestly, it feels pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And, like, considering the situation, like, you know. We get Ken Ritz's backstory here, which I find hilarious and very confusing.
He's like a anti-Rayford while also being the exact same as Rayford.
Like, again, like the plane, like the weird, like, plane backstory is like Rayford has his backstory of, you know, choosing to ground himself after he had two martinis. And then we get Ken Ritz's backstory, which is that he refused to fly a faulty plane.
Right.
And the next person who flew the faulty plane died.
Yeah.
But then they never, like, rehired him afterwards.
Right, because they wanted to bury him because he's a troublemaker. Because he's basically saying, like, oh, the 1997 Dodge Durango explodes.
It will kill
all
you.
Of them explode.
Yeah, and they're
so
like,
I'm not
shut
gonna
up,
lie.
Bitch.
Yeah. And even though, like, the widowed wives of the dead pilots love me, here I am being a rascal.
come on, Ken Ritz. This is more your style anyway.
I did think it was funny how much Buck was like, wait, what are you talking about? You can't fly it. And he's like, don't worry about it. I was like, no, seriously. I know we're in the apocalypse, but you have to tell me why you can't fly.
But can you? Yeah, like, can you fly a plane? That was pretty funny.
That was funny. And I sided with Buck a little bit on that, but also, like...
No, I mean, I think that's honestly entirely fair to be like, wait, person, I just paid $1,500 to...
In traveler's
checks.
Can
you actually fly a plane? Like, did you get grounded for drinking 17 martinis before you flew?
Yeah, but also...
Luckily, it's because he's so honorable.
Right.
And that's why he got fired.
It's absolutely an insane choice. But that's probably because Ken Ritz becomes a bigger character later...
So, Ken's talking to Buck about his theories about what has happened.
And I love this, by the way.
This is where we start to bring in Ken Ritz's UFO theories, and honestly, if I were in the Raptor, that's what I would think.
So, basically, and I'm hoping that we get more of this throughout the books, I cannot remember, but we get these other people's theories, and everyone's like, that's fucking stupid. And then they all pause and look at the camera and be like, well, we are in the biblical rapture.
Yeah.
So that's no stupider. Like, to me, an idea that, oh my God. And the way that Ken says it, it's so fucking funny because he's like, well, maybe the people weren't strong enough to resist.
That
because
kills me.
It's all, I have, I felt like there must have been a meeting about this line.
Yeah, like, to get it just right.
Jerry B., you can't say this.
You can't say that the Christians are weak.
It's like, well, you know, they're like stupid and gullible, right? Because they're going to buy these books. Money, money, money. Well, they, okay, who gives a fuck? They're too stupid to know that we're calling them dumbasses. But yeah, I mean, the fact that he's saying, basically, aliens psychically stole everyone or whatever. Dimension ripped them.
Yeah, and then put them somewhere else, maybe.
Maybe, and they might be dead, they might not. They might do it again, but the whole thing is they took kids and, you know, innocent one. I mean, he doesn't really lean into that. But basically the fact they took all these kids, it's basically, it makes total sense. It makes way more sense than Jesus did it.
Yes.
Basically saying, yeah, isn't it interesting that all the Christians and children are gone? Weird, gullible, weak people who believe in sky daddies. So I thought that rocked. I cannot believe they gave him that much credence. And that is why I'm going to take back what I said before. These books aren't that bad to read sometimes.
No, that was such a little gift in there. I thought that was so weird and funny that made it through.
Now that you're on episode 4, go ahead and read them. They're not that bad. They're pretty bad.
They're really stupid. You will have
fun. I think they're fun.
I mean, listen, you got to do my method, which is number one, you got to get in your hammock.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you got to smoke some weed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read the book.
Then you read the book.
And you make little jokes to yourself in the margins.
Start a podcast of your own and make fun of it.
Actually, don't. in this part also, while they're throwing ideas around, Buck tries to act like he was, like, best friends with Lucinda Washington, who I believe he just met 5 days ago.
No. It was before that. He went to Lucinda Washington sort of to apologize for scooping them back in the day. I was also confused because that chapter is bouncing all over the fucking place. Now, it's impossible. It's possible I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
Because I thought the whole thing was with that flashback was actually only, like, 5 days before.
That flashback was him. Yeah, no, the flashback was setting up his relationship to her. And that wasn't just when they met. In that time that he met her in the last chapter or whatever, the last chunk, was him kind of doing trying to get in the good graces. I don't believe on his way to London that he scooped it.
Okay.
But I could be wrong because that chapter's pretty confusing.
I thought it was, but I mean, regardless, like he doesn't really talk about this character like otherwise. So I thought it was pretty rich to be like, she was my friend.
Right.
She's gone. She wasn't weak at all.
The point of Lucinda Washington is she's a strong black woman.
Yes.
And,
so the aliens couldn't have just sucked her up. She wasn't weak.
Exactly. And, you know, I guess, yeah. It's kind of cool that they did that, considering, you know, these are people who don't really consider anyone that's not a white cis male a human. So,
yeah.
Gotta give it up. Way to go, Jerry B.
So that ends this chunk. Now
the only enjoyable Buck chapter, maybe ever, and maybe until he gets blown up by an RPG.
It is purely because of Kinritz talking about UFOs.
If Kinritz is like, yeah, I mean, Bucky needs help, but I feel like pretty soon Bucky's going to get some characters. Or maybe he's not. I have no idea what happens.
I don't fucking know, man. Well, unfortunately, now he's flip over to Rafer and he's fucking reading the Bible.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Bible.
He's so, the Bible.
It's all downhill from here, but also him reading the Bible is really, really funny, so it works out.
Yeah, this is where he talks about some of the words being read, and I'm like, uh-oh, it's that red letter KJV, baby. Now, Tim, explain to the listeners, because maybe there are people who did not grow up like us and don't know what the fuck that means.
All right, so there's many versions of the Bible, but weirdly, most evangelical Christians only fuck with the King James Version. The reason for that is long and complicated and weird.
And stupid.
And basically, the gist is they put all the words that Jesus Christ, his goddamn self, said and read.
So you can just skim through and see, like, oh, Jesus said that.
So it jumps off the page and things of that nature.
So another thing that comes up in this section, like, we're supposed to believe that Rayford, like, has been going to church, like, off and on.
So, yeah, for his whole life. They introduced the concept of cool church,
yeah,
which I dug. I want to go to cool church, because, especially now that we have a cool neighborhood.
I don't need that. But I don't know.
I get the vibe of like, yeah, we went to fucking Hawaii together. We had wine coolers together. Yeah. We would like watch my
cool
kids
church.
When I left town, so I didn't have to be a good
the
dad.
The kids would go to the fucking like rock climbing gym.
Yeah. Everyone theoretically sucked my dick because I flew big ass planes.
Yeah, they do talk about that a bit. But like, the book acts like Rayford has never heard of the concept of salvation before. And I thought that was really weird.
No, totally. It's a very strange second instance of fake Christians, because we go from what my assumption is Christers, you know.
Christmas and Easter.
Christmas and Easter Christians, which I think is more of a
Catholic thing?
Liturgical thing, I was going to say. So like you're like – the closer you get to Catholic.
Yeah. You're Episcopalians, and such.
Lutherans,
Lutherans.
Maybe Methodists. If you have a nice, if your church is really pretty, you're more likely to do
to have a creaster. Yeah.
But this one's different. I can't really put my thumb on any of my anecdata of what this would be. I'm sure this is a thing, and I'm sure there's.
If it's just
plenty.
Like a generic non-denominational, like
yeah, but a lot of those churches are like kind of a whip.
Yeah. Like, this is where I'm actually really curious, and I want to toss it to the listeners, though. Like,
yeah.
Did any of you go to a church that didn't talk about salvation? Like, a Christian church that did not talk about salvation? Because to me, like, it's baffling to even think about that. But it also was shocking to me that other churches don't talk about the rapture.
Because there's a lot
of... Because that was so the way I grew up that I don't know what's normal.
Yeah, definitely. And I went to a variety of churches. And, technically, I went to primarily non-denominational churches, which later
in
I found out.
In the megachurch vein.
No, before that.
Oh, okay.
The megachurch I went to was Baptist. I think you kind of label all of them vaguely Baptist, but they didn't really fuck with that.
Yeah, I do think, well, cause, like, it's interesting for me, like, I grew up in an independent Baptist church, which is, take the Southern Baptist Church, and it's even more crazy. Because we didn't have any structure or anything.
Yeah, but I was raised in a church that was very racially diverse, which
I think... That's actually really interesting.
Yeah, which I think is really cool. I just remember it being Central Christian Church. I don't believe they hit on anything specific. I was kind of too young to know what any of their sticking points were. They seem to be trying that they're really fun, and you know, maybe because of that, but I don't know, they seem to be trying to do their best. I don't really know. But then I went to Calvary Chapel, which I believe I talked about.
Calvary Chapel is like part of like a larger group.
And I'm pretty sure I talked about it, but if not, basically Calvary Chapel was founded in the 70s, and the whole vibe was like, I'm trying to save hippies.
Oh yeah, we
and,
did talk about
yeah.
This
the hippies
bit.
Walked
yeah.
in with no shoes. Yeah. It was therefore
we're cool.
My carpet and he's like, well then let's rip out the carpet. So I want
to
save these people.
And we love to make our churches into Walmart.
Exactly. So it's basically trying to get you to come there, but because it's like, oh, people are used to going to Walmart, yada yada yada. But they taught the Bible book by book. Mm. Not
so you go through it all.
Not in order. They kind of hop around. Mm. So you don't have a lot of begats next to begats, but when they start Mark, they do all of Mark. And I respect that, you know?
If you're gonna do it, like, yeah, at least, like, actually read your book.
Because I remember the pastor being like, this is a tough one.
No, like, people don't, like, well, I'm not shocked anymore, but, like, I would say most Christians don't really know what's in the Bible.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, we had moments in there where it was like, okay, we're still a little weird. We had speaking in tongues, but that was the first one where he kind of like stopped and goes, we had tongues, we had an interpretation, and kind of like saying we can move on without scolding that person, but also being like, this is something that happened.
Yeah.
And treating it as almost a normal thing.
Interesting.
Because I think tongues is supposed to have an interpretation.
It is.
But I didn't really fuck with all that.
That's why that was like never like a thing at my church for sure.
Definitely. So all that to say is the coolest church that I ever went to is what I would assume would have zero people left over.
Right.
So all that to say, I have no idea what Rafer's talking about.
What the
about,
fuck
but
is this church?
I have to assume there's like rich people churches that people just go to like do whatever. But I kind of think that that's the churches that Tim LaHaye thinks are good. So I can't tell if he's making shit up. So I definitely want to hear what the audience thinks about this.
Yeah, like, did you go to church, do a church that did not talk about
something? And even if it's like, you know, distant anecdotal, like my uncle mentioned this.
I just want to understand, like, what denomination this could possibly be. Or, if more likely, Tim LaHaye and Jerry B. Jenkins are talking out of their asses.
Yeah.
I think they're just making shit up to be mad at.
Yeah.
Basically.
And again, like, yet this exists. It's just such an interesting thing to be in the first two fake Christians.
Yes.
That we're going to get. And we're going to meet, like, I'm pretty sure we're going to meet, like, a bigger oops.
Oh,
I was supposed
are.
To be a Christian.
Oh,
and
we
that
are.
One's much better.
We're getting there.
I think. Oh, that's right. You know most of this book.
Yeah. So, while Rafer is reading the Bible, he finds Irene's old Bible, and he finds some notes in there. Oh, actually, sorry. Before I get into that, I need to say one more thing. Because, okay, when Irene goes and finds her new, like, Bible-believing church, this is another very Christian brain statement. Rafer says that the church was a little too literal and personal and challenging for him.
I like that.
I didn't go because it was too challenging to me. Like, that is what this kind of Christian believes. Like, they don't want to go to church because it's challenging for them.
Right.
Not because they think it's bullshit.
Right. And he also said, like, literally, no one thought I was cool for flying airplanes anymore.
And that made me like it.
Like, no one's, like, Rayford was in the middle of church and be like, no, this is kind of not about me and I not deal with it.
I don't like it.
And I respect that.
I do respect that.
He also bought this
Bible
to Irene and to kind of be like, see, I'm spiritual. Let's never talk about this again. And then being like, why did I buy her a Bible?
And if
we could just consistently have Ray being like, I did something so strange. What is wrong with me?
I just happened to have this Bible here.
Because it's possible it's a tear down of toxic masculinity. Let's go, Jerry B. Oh, feminist man. Icon.
Oh, boy. So in Irene's Bible or her notes around it, whatever, she has her little prayer list.
Wait a second. I always was taught you don't write in the Bible. That's bad.
Really? Oh, we totally did. You underline because that's your study Bible.
Because that's
the thing. It was like, oh, if your Bible's not well worn, you're not using it right.
I think, yeah, no, that's why I say constantly and joke to myself, play on the, like, if someone's Bible is falling apart, they probably are
they're
not.
They're not. That's the
so
quote. That's
I'll say
the quote.
It about, like, anything. If their gamer chair is falling apart, they're probably not.
Yes.
Yeah, now that you mentioned, I think I've seen both. I
wrote in mine.
But I think it was probably I was confused by it because I was like, wait, I thought we're supposed to treat this nice.
As sacred.
But it's like, oh, you can underline it, but you can highlight it, but da da da. My mom yelled at me for ripping out pages one time.
Well, that's different, though. Different to rip it out versus taking notes in it.
They're in my way. I kept losing my sword drills.
Oh my god. Making your Bible more ergonomic.
Page one.
So that you can win sword drills. Tim,
Genesis 1:1.
Do you also want to explain what a sword drill is for those that might not know?
No, let's let them sit on it.
What? Sword drill is when everyone holds their little Bible and the youth pastor is like, all right, Matthew 12:15, and everyone, whoever gets to it first, put your hand up, and then you read the verse, and you win.
One time in grad school, with Jennifer's grad school friends, we were drinking, and we started doing sword drills, and we had a lot of fun. We had three Bibles or something.
Because we were all in grad school studying religion. So there were like a billion Bibles around.
Yeah, but for some reason I was like, would you use the Bible? But you're right.
Yeah, no, we had lots. I have many Bibles.
But you went to an Ivy League East Coast school, so.
Yeah, but you know what? We were studying that shit, so we had it.
None of you are Christians, though. And I know that because I got in a fight with the one Christian at Harvard one time.
The one Christian at Harvard. So in Irene's notes, she has her prayer list, which I for sure, like, did you ever have like you would keep a little journal with your like prayer list or whatever?
Again, I didn't. It's wrong to vocalize your walk with the Lord.
I see, and it's wrong
to show vulnerability in that sense and write it down.
I feel like I did. I
had
like
a mental note.
This is very much a thing, but
it should be private. You should keep it to yourself.
Keep it
to yourself.
So in Irene's notes, she writes this. Rafe, for his salvation, and then I'd be a loving wife to him.
Let's go, girl.
Chloe, that she come to Christ and live in purity.
Let's go, girl.
Like, I just love that those were the, like, Chloe, you better not fuck.
Don't do it.
Pray my freshman daughter at Stanford doesn't fuck. Otherwise, she's worthless.
She's in the Ivy League of the
West.
Please don't fuck anyone, Chloe. Please.
Yeah.
And then she's like, Raimi, keep your childlike innocence in your Christianity. I'm like, yeah. Fucking Ritz is right. Only dummies.
Well, like, again, like, we've talked about this story before, but, like, I remember my church would do a thing, like, graduation Sunday. So, like, all the, like, high school and college people that were graduating, they do a whole thing. And a guy praying that people wouldn't go away to college and learn too much and become not Christian anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure that's been a thing for quite a while, but I feel like we were part of the early generation where that became like a big thing that was kind of like talked about.
Like, right? Oh no, they're going to go to the liberal college and they're going to learn too much.
And that's probably just because we went to college when social media was existed or introduced.
In their defense, we did go to college and lose our religion.
That's true, but it's because I went to a Christian college.
Yeah.
And
it's because I studied the Bible.
Right. And if I went to a state school that barely touched on the Bible, who the fuck knows?
I don't
want to
think about it. I don't want to think about it. It's terrible. But yeah, I thought that was real funny.
Yeah, him also reading the end of Revelation is really good.
Yeah, he just looks at the back.
What the fuck does any of this mean? None of this makes any sense.
I get you. And also, was he talking about like her notes in the Bible, or she just write precious?
Right.
Besides
the fact
her
that
things?
She writes.
I was like Gollum much.
The way that she writes precious in Revelation is insane to me, because all I remember that book is it's batshit.
It's crazy. It is.
Like, back to back. Because it's just, you know, what is it, John?
John, yeah.
Fucking having a mushroom trip.
Yeah, he's fucking tripping on Patmos.
Exiled to Patmos. So, none of it makes any sense, but it's also kind of cool. It's just a dude losing it, how dare you send me to Patmos, fuckers.
It's an apocalypse, you know? It's like weird shit's going on.
Yeah. And I did like that they said it's Revelation. And not one, Revelations, and two, not Revelation like we would think of it being like the end times, but being like literally, oh, I had a revelation.
A revelation, yeah. So that's, we'll switch over to Buck for a second now before we go back to the end of Rayford. So Buck does make it to New York, but the whole city is super fucked.
Yeah.
You like can't get in and out.
In a way that makes sense, it's like, oh, this apocalypse happened in your small town. You don't even want to know what happens to New York City.
Dude, and I did feel like that there were parts of this that were very realistic and parts that weren't. The part where he had to, like, wait on the platform for, like, 2 hours and, like, one train came and was too full. And then he had to wait for another one. I'm like, that was literally just my commute in Boston all the time.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wait, is it under 30 degrees on the Green Line? Yeah.
What was not realistic is him talking about tapping away on his little laptop on the train, like, as if you're going to get a seat, bitch. You're going to be standing up. What are you talking about?
Here's my lore. Bucky pushes his way through. He says, I'm Bucky. I'm Bucky Barnes.
I'm the Buckster. I'm the seat.
I have to scoop. And so he pushes people all the way.
But wasn't his whole thing, too, that he's like, I'll walk. I'm fine. Like, when he got off the plane, he just, like, walked.
Yeah, so, but I think he ran, so he didn't have to wait for the bus.
Oh, okay. Well, I assumed I was like,
he's like, I'm going to beat you fuckers, because I'm going to solve. Because he didn't mention solving this crisis like he did for the airplane, but my man's still out here solving
it. That's true.
So he's elbowing, he's pushing, he's coughing, and he says, ow, my leg hurts.
ow, my head hurts, because I fell down the airplane.
Rapture head. I got a rapture head.
Yeah, I got a wound. I got a head wound.
And he has to push people all the way to get a seat.
So, okay, so maybe he does get a seat there, but
or Tim LaHaye and Jerry B. Jenkins have literally never rode a subway.
That is more what I'm assuming, is they don't know how subway works.
So not everyone gets seats? Like, so you like stand?
Oh,
or?
No. Your face is going to be in someone's armpit.
Yeah.
So that just the general train fuckery I thought did make sense. And then it was like the train stops, it doesn't go as far as he's even thinking it's going to, and it's like, I have to walk 15 miles to my apartment.
He already
apartment.
Walked 2 miles, was it?
To like, the train.
Yeah, outside of Philly, I think, or something.
Not Philly.
I thought it was somewhere like, I got confused. They said a lot of shit.
I think it's probably like Newark or something.
Yeah.
Like just outside of the city.
Yeah. So, but Buck does a lot of walking.
He walks a lot. But Tim, he does a jokey like, God help me, when he's walking.
And then he realizes, oh wait, I'm in the Christian apocalypse.
And a magical bicycle appears for him to ride.
Yeah, and he literally goes, only in New York, baby.
Which is hilarious
to me. He should have grabbed a slice and ridden that bike that was like, leave a penny, take a bike, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah, he needed a big old sloppy slice of pizza that's folded in half. Mm-hmm. If he really was going to go full New York.
Fight a rat for it.
Yeah.
So he's able to get to his office. But it's really strange because here we are at the end of Chapter 7, and Bucky gets all the way from Chicago to his office in like 2 pages.
Yeah, they do not even like talk. I thought there was going to be more on the little plane with Ken Ritz.
Right.
Like nothing. No.
Right.
It's like, he's back. That's it.
It was like, okay, well, Ken Ritz, surely he won't show up again.
I mean,
Or we're
I don't
wrong.
Know. Or we're wrong. I don't know. I hope
there's
he does.
Another cool pilot.
He's dope. He believes in aliens, so he's okay with me.
Mm-hmm.
Bucky gets back to the Global Weekly. He like breaks down and sobs in front of everyone, which is pretty dope. It was the Shepherd was not great. I almost like
because he said he said some line on the train that he's like, okay, I'm so far behind, so the only way that I'm going to get like the scoop is if I just like write my fucking ass off. And I forget what the exact line is. It's just so bad. And the other thing that I forgot to talk about is, when Rayford is reading Revelation, they talk about, he's trying to figure out what the Bible means. And it's like, I will come quickly. and he's like, Jesus, what was he talking about? I've decided that making cum equal nut ejaculation okay. is an anti-religious deep state conspiracy.
Okay.
Because he says, come quickly. You don't know when I come, like 14 different ways. And it's like, my mind's in the goddamn gutter.
Okay. Also, Bucky in this chapter also talks about fingering the wound on his head. And I'm like, you guys got to stop this.
Bro.
Think about what your words mean. Butt makes it back. He cries in front of everybody, whatever.
But he keeps talking about it like, these are my, like, nemesises, my competitors and co-workers.
But I'm so glad to see them.
And they make jokes about how good he is. But, yeah, no, Buck sucks, and he continues to suck. But at least he has an emotional moment here where
I did feel like that did make me feel slightly less hatred towards
him. Right, because maybe we were reading the version of the book that is like just barely holding it together.
Right. So he's being extra annoying because he's trying not to cry.
So
I get that.
Chapter 8 forward, we're going to like Buck. That's what's going to happen, I bet.
Okay, we'll see.
We'll see.
Flip back over to Rayford to close us out in this chapter. And he checks in with work to find out his co-pilot did indeed commit suicide.
Okay.
They had to clarify that, so he's not coming back. He's for sure dead.
Bye.
He also tries to check in on Chloe's progress to Chicago. And, like, it's the whole conversation of, like, oh, she's on this little puddle jumper here and doing all this weird shit. But then the person he's talking to says, well, I'm sorry for what you're going through, sir, but you can be grateful your daughter didn't get on PanCon directly out of Palo Alto. The last one out of there went down last night. No survivors.
Right.
Like, what?
They explicitly confirm, like,
everybody on this plane your daughter should have been on died for some reason.
After the
like,
rapture.
Yeah, totally unrelated. Just a different
and
tragedy.
I hope we find out about that. That kind of felt a little bit like salt. In the, you're left over here in the rapture wound. But yeah, we know that Rayford gets through. He knows that Chloe's alive.
Yeah.
He talks to her roommate. And her roommate was like, yeah, I feel kind of bad that no one that I knew disappeared. And Ray's like, I didn't know whether to congratulate her or to give my condolences because none of them are in heaven.
They're all heathens, yeah. All your friends.
So Chloe's alive for sure. And she's on her way back. And I kind of lost track of where she is. They don't know where she is, but she's getting closer, and she keeps hopping around. She's in the Ozarks, shout out.
She was in the Ozarks, yeah. She's going around all crazy ways, but good thing she wasn't on that Palo Alto flight.
So I assume she's going to be in the next chapter, or the next chapter or two. Could be in the next episode of our
show. I think she should be, yeah. I think she'll be in the next episode. So at least there's, like, a female character that's not Hattie.
Super excited to see how they write her. Crazy. We're looking forward to be let down.
It's could be worse. I mean, I think that she comes across like very sympathetic mm-hmm. to me, but that's because I'm a godless heathen. So
I think too, even if she was kind of bleh, we kind of need a bleh character in between Buck and Rayford and how weird they are.
Man, we've got to buffer them.
If they wrote the world's worst female character, but somehow it was just because she was boring, it would be like mana upon our
Yeah,
it would
be like, actually, thank you for this thank gift. You for this. Instead of like making her like weird and shrill or like constantly crying or something.
She has like no depth, but thankfully it's not, you know, she's not talking about getting scoops and shit like that.
Yeah, she's not Buck, and that's what the most important thing is.
Yeah, so I think this is the officially the Christian fiction zone of trying to trick you into being a Christian.
Oh yeah, they're really starting to lay it on. And in fact, I feel like there are like straight up parts of the book that are like kind of written in a way to like pitch the reader.
Totally.
Like to be like, won't you pray like now? Like,
yeah,
because
I think
like,
when they get saved, they literally like go through.
Yeah, like this prayer. Is what happens. Like, this is how you do it.
Right, right. Because, you know, earlier Rafer's like, wait, I thought we were Christians because of blah, 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 blah. I guess we'll have to figure it out. So, yeah, my memory is it could be read as an instruction manual because they, you know, and that being said, they are being instructed and they have like, I don't know the fuck this is. So if they were going through a legit conversion experience, a saved experience, then it'd probably happen that way. But we know what you're doing. You're trying to trick us.
You're trying to friggin' trick us.
But we'll see what happens when we get there.
Yeah.
I assume that's going to be in another episode of two of our show. I'm hoping Chloe's in the next episode.
I think she will be. I do. It is really funny that like I keep like reading this chapter and being like, oh, that's kind of boring. But then there's like so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Because like everything is insane in these books. Like,
well, we're still in the stand version of everything.
Right. Right.
Where,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just the description of how fucked up New York is. Of like, oh yeah, there is a million trains that crashed into one another.
Yeah.
There's like all these cars. There's like, you know, subway zones they would have been able to use, but that's just where they put in the crane to move cars. It's interesting, and they don't go as deep as I would like.
It should.
But neither did the stand, so what are you going to do?
I mean, the stand was kind of cool, because didn't the stand do the whole thing where they, like, kind of zoomed in on different people dying? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really sick.
Right, like, these aren't main characters. This is just an interim chapter where all these people die.
Just showing you the array of human life falling apart.
Well, that's the end of chapter 7. Jennifer, any final thoughts?
I keep thinking about the whole, like, fake Christian thing and the way things are framed in this. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I could talk about that a long time, and, like, I don't mind if it's slightly boring because I find it so fascinating just to peel back those layers of, like, what are we supposed to take away from
this? Like, what are you actually saying here?
Exactly.
I'm super excited to hopefully hear back from some listeners about whether they learned about salvation in their churches.
That's one nice thing about doing this every other week.
Yes.
We do have a week to get
to, like,
feedback.
Absorb, what people are saying. And it gives me – because, like, I mean, I imagine at some point we'll probably move to weekly, but, like – it's kind of like reading this book. I don't know. There's a lot on my brain, like, and then doing the notes for it. Cause I always end up, like, researching something horrible.
Yeah.
Like, as it goes along with this. So, yeah. I definitely, you know what, one thing I read this week that wasn't, like, fully connected, but Tim and Beverly LaHaye wrote a book called The Act of Marriage about sex.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, eventually we'll have to launch a Patreon and cover that book.
Do you know what's fucked up? Is that, like, it's obviously, like, not good, but some of it's, like, kind of good, though.
Basically, Tim LaHaye's, you've got to eat pussy.
I mean, kind of.
Oh, what's up?
Like, he's basically like, you should make sure she's wet.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was actually, like, really shocked at, like, I mean, obviously there's a lot of, like, weirdest, like, gender essentialism and stuff, but I was pleasantly surprised.
So, hashtag. So
I guess Tim and Beverly Hay were just banging it out until he died.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
My erotic king out there in hell. But
yeah, he's dead now, so.
Cool. Well, you can find us at Tribulation Trib Farce Pod on Twitter. That's typically the best way to McFrickin' tell us.
Yes.
Things. We have an email, but I just kind of forgot about it.
I like the Twitter better, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to check it right now. We got anything? Nope, just Twitter saying.
But if you want to email us, you can.
Yeah.
What is our email?
It is tribulationfarce@gmail.com.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward.
Because not everyone uses Twitter. So
yes.
If you want to email It is, yet again, tribulationfarce@gmail.com. You can follow me at Tim Lanning on Twitter. You can follow Jennifer Cheek at Jennifer Cheek. Is there anything else specifically you want to lift up?
Well, I would just say keep an eye on the skies, and by that I mean our Twitter account, because we are going to launch our Patreon pretty soon.
Yes, we got a very scary IRS email.
A letter from the IRS that made us a very frightened. It ended up being nothing, but it was the push we needed to be like, oh shit, we gotta do a Patreon for this.
Yeah, because we wanted to have a little bit of runway. We wanted, you know, either like a month or two before we launched it, and now we've hit a month in that this is, well, not a month, like 2 months, because this is our fourth episode.
Right, a month of episodes.
Yeah, so still working on it, figure out what we want to do.
I need to review it.
And like I think we've mentioned, the vibe is more of a, it's like a mix of the Tribulation Farce Patreon, but it's also going to be the Tim and Jennifer content emporium.
So it's probably going to be shit like us maybe talking about the new season of Westworld that's coming out.
Right.
Like that's happening. Like whatever. Yeah. I feel like I could see it very much being what TV shows are we watching and talking about that. But also, dear listeners, I really want to make Tim watch Bad Lifetime movies for the Patreon. And that is my goal. When basically Tim convinced me to do the Patreon by saying, you can make me watch Bad Lifetime movies on this. And I was like, okay, you've convinced me.
Right.
So hopefully there'll be some good content on that. We'll start getting that going in the background. So keep an eye out from when we launch our Patreon.
But you just keep doing you.
Take care of yourselves out there. Research local abortion funds and activism. Take care of each other in these fucking terrible times.
Very true. Watch out for local elections. Things are going to get very fucky, even more fucky. Planned Parenthood most likely has enough money, so donate to abortion funds instead and figure out what you can do at your local community to make sure that people don't die. Because it is that serious. It's no joke.
It super is, actually.
This is going to kill a lot of people.
So I don't cry.
Yes. A lot of people are going to die because of the Roe versus Wade shit. Anyways. Oh, boy.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.